Can you figure it out yet?
No, I was really thinking when the chorus came that I would know it. Like, I know that guy's voice, and it's so in that, like, Depeche Mode, Erasure, Yaz, over-synthed.
You got it. You got it, Yaz.
Is it Yaz?
It is Yaz. I just bought the album yesterday. iTunes was doing a...
big sale on Yaz albums, were they?
No, I don't know if you saw, if you were on iTunes yesterday, they were doing a big 80s sale. It's a $7... got it for $7.99. You know, there's like three songs by them that I really, really like, you know?
Right. And a whole bunch you don't.
Right. I mean, that's the thing. You get, there's this really terrible song on here called I Before E Except After C. Have you heard this song?
I like the sound of it, though.
No, it's not even a song. Listen.
It's just. Because there will always be for two. There will always be inside. You can feel the outside. You can see the difference. Inside, stop, inside.
It's about 4 minutes of that.
Outside, stop, inside. You can feel the difference. feel the difference.
It's almost like Revolution. It's like number nine. Number nine, number nine.
That's some good, something good to have on in the background while you're getting busy.
Right. Inside, outside, in. Honey, what are we listening to? Come on, this is mood music, baby. Yeah. Got some candles here. What is this? This is the song I Before E Except After C. You don't know this song?
You can stop, stop, and see that you can stop. You can see the difference. Dragons, the policeman knew.
Oh, baby.
I'd like to know what like the total studio bill was to produce that track.
Yeah, and I love, you know, I mean, the thing is, you know, with iTunes, right? I mean, $7.99 for the album, right? It was a sale, so I got the album. And it really was like a... I don't know, sort of a breakthrough in sort of synth pop. And it kind of came around, obviously, in the same time as Depeche Mode. And interestingly, I think, the guy, was it Vince Young? I forget his name exactly, from Yaz. Mm-hmm. But he was also involved with Depeche Mode at the same time. So he had sort of two big albums at that time, right?
Yeah, there was some cross-pollination between a lot of those groups, you know?
Yeah.
So it's kind of like that same thing. Like if you look at all the various players that floated through, like Split Enz, Crowded House, Squeeze, like the... Like, just in the same way, like those synth bands, like they all kind of shared a couple players in common. And
yeah. But, you know, that song. So you buy the album for $7.99, but each individual song, if you bought them all individually, was like, you know, $14 or something like that.
Right.
And that I Before E Except After C is 99 cents. But, you know, Don't Go, the song we were just listening to, is, you know, $1.29. So it's like you buy the whole album and you get stuck with some of these crap songs, of course.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I wonder what the individual download charts are like for just I Before E Except After C.
Yeah,
because you can listen to a sample. You know, it's not like you'd have at least some warning.
Right. Yeah, exactly. You get like a minute sample, I think, or like 90 seconds, whatever it is now that they increase the sample time to, so you know that you're not getting you know what crap you're getting, you know. But yeah, Only You is another one of their big songs. Don't Go is, of course, the song we were just listening to. You know Only You, right?
I probably, if I heard the chorus.
Now, is that their biggest song? Do you know? Here's wow. Only You.
They're supposed to breathe fire, and occasionally get themselves.
I'll put it up to the chorus here to the best of my ability. Recognize that?
To me, I don't know. Like the song "Situation," I think is the one that I know.
Right. That's their. Is it their biggest?
"Situation"? You know, that's the one that like I think most people who know Yaz would know.
Yeah. Here's "Situation."
Right. Yes. As soon as I hear that, I immediately know it.
And some good stuff, you know. It doesn't have like I was hoping that this album. I previewed most of it, you know, before I bought it. I was hoping it would be one of those, you know, sort of Naked Eyes greatest hits style things. Where
right,
I'm
there'd be some real hidden gems in there.
Yeah, and you know what? There are some interesting things on here that I'm glad I bought it for, you know. But then there are the terrible I Before E Except After C.
Right. Hey, interesting trivia note I just found out here while I was floating around. You know, Vince Clarke left Depeche Mode
Vince
to start
Clark.
Yaz.
Vince Clarke. That's right.
Yeah. And then he left Yaz to start Erasure.
Ah.
So.
You know, it's funny you said Erasure. That was your first guess before we jumped on, we started recording the show. You said, is that Erasure? And that's exactly what my wife said. You know, her favorite, one of her favorite bands is Erasure. And so I put it on yesterday while we were having some dinner outside, and I hit play, and she's like, is that Erasure? I said, no. So you said the exact same thing.
Yeah, they really do. They have a very distinct synthesizer sound. And like, you know, I think some of those early Depeche Modes hit, like Master and Servant. Like, that's what I was kind of hearing there. But, and I don't know, maybe Vince Clarke was still with them at that time. I'm not as schooled in my Depeche Mode trivia. I always remember you and I, our mutual friend in high school, Stacey Hager, knew a surprising amount of information about Depeche Mode.
Yeah, she did. I'm not sure why that was, but I mean, it was harder then to get a lot of good information, right? I mean, it was much harder then to get a lot of good information.
Right. Al Gore had not yet invented the internet. And so coming up with information like that, you know, was not like done in two clicks.
Right. Yeah, it's true. I mean, she managed to find out a lot of cool stuff about them that I didn't know. But so what was the chronology again? So Vince Clarke was with.
So at some point he was with Depeche Mode. But in the very early 80s, he left and started Yaz, which in the UK is called Yazoo. And that also had Alison Moyet in it. And, you know, she had a solo career, too. So after this broke apart, she went solo and he started Erasure with, I want to say, Andrew Bell's the other guy. Is that right?
Let me know.
I'm sure I can find this incident. Yes, that's right. Andrew Bell. I know I could find that in like two clicks. Of which, you know, their hit A Little Respect is one of my very, very favorite 80s songs. And this might be something interesting. I'm going to entreat you to do this with me here in a moment. We did this like 100 grizzes ago. Can you open up your iTunes?
I have it open, yeah, as we speak.
So you're still on your Apple IIc?
I'm on my Commodore 64.
Have you seen, by the way, the new – we did a really cool Commodore 64 thing on a new Chikara video. I'll have to
– I think I saw that. Didn't I see that? Or maybe – no, that I saw – you know what I saw? I saw the video game thing.
The Grand Theft Auto. So scroll down here in your playlists. Let's see. Where would be your most played or your top 50? Mine is set to 75, my top 75 most played. Can you access that?
Oh, my most played songs? Yeah. Where do I – I think I have – it's a playlist, right? Yeah,
yes.
Most played. Let's see. Where is that? Most played playlist. Where the heck is it? Is it underneath Genius Mixes?
No, like under Playlist, it's usually in the top few. It's like my top rated is one of the first ones.
I have mine set to 25.
I see. Well, yes, I've opened mine up, and we'll get to this. We're going to get a little more in depth with this, I think, because we have about an hour to fill here. Number 8 on my list is A Little Respect by Erasure. That is one of the most played songs in my iTunes. So that's what made me think of this. But you remember a while ago we had talked about the songs that, with some surprise, I think, the songs that populated the top of this list in our iTunes.
Right. And I think what's interesting about it is that mine, I have this, I don't know why it's still listed in here. And maybe I just need to resync this or clean it out and start it fresh. Because for a while, like, I would take a nap to this Native American flute CD. And it's a like Native American lifescapes flute music. Sure enough,
I hope you bought that like in a gift shop for like $19.99, that CD.
I did. I got it. I think actually, you know, that little Target end cap thing at Target where you could press play and it was like mood, you know, like
sounds
of the
forest. There's like one Jewel CD and a bunch of stuff you'd never heard of.
Right. So there was one of, and that was where I got it. It was like $9.99 or something a few years ago ripped and put into iTunes, but that's in here. But it's funny. I don't know. I haven't listened to some of these songs in a while, some of them anyway, but I think one of my top songs, number 3 on my list, Everybody Wants to Rule the World.
That is number 4 on mine.
Wow, really?
Yes. That's kind of crazy.
But they're sort of mixed around. So I'm kind of looking here. Modern Guilt by Beck is in here.
Oh, okay. I'm going to look just at my top 25 since that's what you have as well. And I'll be kind of curious. Let's compare some notes here. There is only one They Might Be Giants song in my top 25. That's surprising to me, given how much I listen to them. And it's the original version of James K. Polk. Does that surprise you?
That does surprise me. Surprisingly, there's no They Might Be Giants in here. But again, I think this thing is a little fakakad because of this whole Native American flute music CD that's in here. But and because I, you know, I was transferring my iTunes library off of my, you know, I had that Drobo in the background, and I was moving it off the Drobo so I could clean it off and restart it and the whole thing. So things got a little messed up. But there's no They Might Be Giants in here. Does that surprise you?
That does surprise me a little bit. It does indeed. I have a Raul Medon song in my top 25 most played. Do you?
No, I don't.
Okay. I have All the Answers, which is from his second album. Raul Medon, incidentally, I don't remember exactly. The first time I saw him, he was like on Conan or something like that. And it took me like a day or two to hunt down who he was because I wasn't sure what episode of Conan he was on. But he is a blind musician who, despite the efforts, I think, of his management to portray him as being much younger than he is, right? I think he's like mid to late 40s.
Right.
Isn't he? Raul Medon. But really does make some wonderful, wonderful music. Raul Medon. And you saw him open for Jamie Cullum like 2 years ago or something, right?
Right. And I don't remember how that unfolded. Did you discover him? You know, it's hard to keep track sometimes.
Right.
You know, you'll have discovered somebody. I'll have discovered somebody first. I don't recall where I found out about him.
I kind of think I figured out who he was. And you were like, oh, yeah. Like, I think you already knew. I don't think I brought him to the table, but
yeah, I saw him open for Jamie Cullum, and he was fantastic. And of course, you know, all the sounds that he's making, you know, whether it's a trumpet sound and all of that, it's all him. Like, it's
right.
It's him making that sound with his mouth.
Right. He's a one-man band.
And he's blind.
Yeah. Let us reiterate his blindness.
Yeah. He's blind.
What other there are some oddities in mine. I've got a song by Baltimora. I've got one by Swing Out Sister.
You have Baltimora? Do you have a Tarzan Boy in there?
Of course. Like, who has any other Baltimora song? I have Breakout by Swing Out Sister, which is an 80s one-hit wonder.
I have Rock With Me by Michael Jackson.
There's no you don't have to ever explain that. It's perfectly justified. I don't know if I have a Michael Jackson in my top 25. I have a Joe Jackson. I have Steppin' Out. But I don't have
because I made Michael Jackson. Do you make any of the Genius playlists? Do you ever do that function?
A couple. I do have a few.
Because occasionally, and I have, I think the reason why that this propagates my most played list is because I have a Michael Jackson Genius Smart playlist. And so I've got, you know.
Oh, I do. I have a Michael Jackson song in my top 10.
Oh, which one?
At number 10, I have Human Nature, which is my very favorite Michael Jackson song. Do you have any, let's throw this out there. Do you have any Poco?
No.
I have a Poco song that just recently crept into my top 25.
I'm going to have to expand this to 100 because, let me see. How do I do that? Where is the 100 mechanism?
I think you right-click.
Yeah, because I think...
And edit smart playlist. Is that how you do it?
Yeah. Edit smart playlist to 20. Yeah, have it to 25. So I'm going to put it up to... I want to put it up to 100 here and see what I get. Most often played... Yeah, I'm going to do most. There we go. Okay. You know what's funny? At the top of my list, if I do most often played, and I fixed it a little bit now, most often played is, and it switches everything. It actually switched everything now. It makes it more accurate, at least recently. Is this meditation sample that I have. It's a 20-minute, have you ever heard of the Centerpoint Research Company? No, you haven't. I'll save you time. You can get a free CD from them in the mail, and what they do
one.
I burned it a few years ago, and it's 20 minutes, and I created a meditation playlist that I'll go to sleep to, and they use all of this incredible like sound technology to like get you to have like this deep, deep, you know, meditative state without – they're like they boast that it's more meditative than like that yogis like achieve. And so I listen to it. I'll put it on, and I'm out. I'm out within like 5 minutes of this thing, and I'll have the most restorative like little nap because it's 20 minutes long, and I'll wake up like 30 minutes later. I'm like, oh my God, it feels like a whole nother day. So that's at the top of my list. That's number one. The Holosync demo CD, 20 minutes long, is the number one thing on my iPhone. But there is a They Might Be Giants song. Now that I've fixed it, there's four They Might Be Giants songs. They're music videos, though, because of my son.
I see.
So I Am a Paleontologist is number five on my list. And what else? Oh, High Five.
Right.
Here Comes Science and the Ballad of Davy Crockett from They
All
Might Be
Fine
Giants.
Selections.
Right. Those are now in my top 100.
Mm. Yeah, I think if my son was making this list, Roy G. Biv would be probably close to the top. There are a couple artists that I have multiple appearances of in my top 25. Mayor Hawthorne, Paul Carrack, and Simply Red all appear multiple times, which must say something about my current music tastes.
Who was the last one? Paul Carrack?
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah, I've got a couple from each of those. Do you, anything really odd that turned up? There's a Morrissey song in my top 25, a live version of him at Earl's Court performing Shoplifters of the World Unite. I'm kind of surprised to see that there, but obviously I listen to it a lot.
I'm trying to think of some ones here that I might not want to admit.
Mm-hmm.
I'll read some just ones that I don't – well, I've already admitted, like Native American flute music and this meditation. That's pretty bad already, right, that I've admitted that.
Mm-hmm.
So in here, some things that I'm proud of, but some things you sort of mentioned. Mayor Hawthorne is in here.
Yeah. Which Mayor Hawthorne song have you listened to the most?
It looks like right now I Wish It Would Rain.
Wow, really? I don't like that one at all.
I think it's because – is it the first song on the album?
I don't think so.
On his new one?
Maybe.
Wish It Would Rain?
I don't know.
Why is that one so high for me? I don't get it.
I don't know. Number two right now on mine is Your Easy Lovin' Ain't Pleasin' Nothin' from A Strange Arrangement. That's number two.
I have a lot of Bob Dylan on here.
Uh-huh.
Because I have a Bob Dylan smart playlist too that I've created. Or not smart playlist, but just a playlist and my Bob Dylan mix. So... Mm-hmm. That will obviously add a lot of Bob Dylan playing time up here. And there was times when I just would take a walk when I was going through a little rough patch in my life. And Bob Dylan got me through it nice and helpful. Mm-hmm. So there was quite a few Bob Dylan songs within that playlist. Top of the list, I think, on Bob Dylan is Things Have Changed, one of my all-time favorite Bob Dylan songs. In fact, that's
from Wonder Boys?
It's from Wonder Boys, yeah.
Yeah.
That's such an incredible story. I don't know if our audience is familiar with this song or not, but it is such a great song. And I would encourage everyone to go out and buy it immediately. It's one of those songs that should be on everyone's, like, you know, if you've got like a list of 100 songs you need to have like in rotation, this is one of them. And I love the story behind it. Are you familiar, like in the extras of Wonder Boys, the movie, they explain, like the director of the film explains like how this song came to pass from Bob Dylan. I don't know if you're familiar with this side
I remember
story.
Us discussing it. This is also the first time. I don't remember which car of this year that you had, but it was the first. You and I had this exact conversation about this Bob Dylan song. You had it on a CD and we're putting it in, but it was the first time I ever rode in this new car of yours. That's where we had this conversation.
Interesting. Yeah. And, you know, the movie, the film, first of all, the book, Wonder Boys, is written by my favorite author, Michael Chabon. It's, you know, highly entertaining film, but they wanted Bob Dylan to write the song. They just felt like it's got to be him. It's got to be him. Mm-hmm. So he agreed to it, and he was a big fan of the book as well. And so he decided to write the song. And they didn't hear from him. Like they knew there was like time was running out. Right, the film had been shot. The film was done. It was in post production. Being cut and edited, and Bob Dylan had seen the cut of the film, sans music, of course, and he'd read the book, of course, so he was very familiar with the characters, but he just kind of, he's Bob Dylan, right? He kind of moves at his own pace. So they asked him to do it, and they were waiting on this song, and they didn't hear from him. And then suddenly, out of the blue, this song just shows up. On a digital tape in the mail to the film producers, and it's this song. I mean, it's this incredible, you know, it's this incredible song. So it was just so funny that, like, you know, he just works at his own pace, but then he releases this like genius song, and it makes the film. Like, without that song, I don't know that the movie would be as good. That's the way I look at it. I mean, I think the song is, you know, fantastic, but yeah, that's my opinion.
So let me ask you this here. We talked about some of the ones that populate the top of our list here. Go to whatever now happens to be the bottom of your list. For me, it's number 75. For you, it's 100. What's there?
Oh, sorry. I hit play on this a few seconds ago. This is Things Have Changed by Bob Dylan.
Don't want in front of me and nothing behind. There's a woman on my life, them kids. drinking champagne.
It goes on like that. So I'm sorry to interrupt. What was your question again? Number
so,
what?
I want you to go to the bottom of your list, which for me is number 75. For you is number 100. What's there?
The bottom of my list. Bicycle Race by Queen.
Tremendous.
I got some. See some. Living Well is the Best Revenge by R.E.M. is at number 79.
The bottom of mine, the very bottom of my list, number 75. Is Sweet Talkin' Woman by Electric Light Orchestra.
Ooh, good one. I have a number 96 here is Soul Drifter by Lindsey Buckingham.
Wow, that is also in mine. Very strange. Yes. Number 68.
I'm surprised this one is way down here. Although, you know, when you compare it to the amount of times I've listened to these other REM, Bob Dylan, Sting songs, no wonder Mayor Hawthorne is still, you know, is climbing the charts, right? But so Just Ain't Gonna Work Out is down here, which is a great song on A Strange Arrangement. And the very bottom of my list, number 100, is Radiohead from the In Rainbows album, is All I Need, which is a beautiful, just atmospheric song. Billie Jean is down here, too, at 98.
So now, this might be interesting, or maybe not, I don't know. You know that there's an option where you can change this from the most played songs to the least played songs?
Right. Well, let's do that.
So yeah, let's
least played.
What is the least played song on your? I'll tell you exactly what mine is. The least played song in my iTunes is Lights, Camera, Action, Wiggles, and the artist is The Wiggles.
Mine's not as fun because mine are well, I don't know. I don't even know what this is. It's track 9.
It's like an unlabeled track.
It's
imported.
An unlabeled track. Let me see if I can find one that's there's some blues song. Don't Stop Me Now by Queen is on here, which I love that song. It's a great song.
Also close to the bottom of the least played, Tchaikovsky's The Nutcracker. I've not played that one very often.
Okay, number 99 on my list. Ogre Battle. I don't know what that song is.
That's got to be from like the Lord of the Rings soundtrack or something.
It's got to be. I bet you're right. It's got to be some like film soundtrack from something I've just never. It's all blues, and I don't know what this is. And I love blues. I don't know why what this is, but yeah, it's a lot of like unlabeled tracks and sort of junk gibberish down here. So that's a look through our most played songs feature list here. I wonder what the other. Highest ratings. Do you ever do that, sort of like rate them by putting in star?
I did when I did the massive import when I first got an iPod and needed to set up iTunes. I was really crazy about doing those star ratings and then gave up after that. I've never did it again. So it really only represents what I originally imported.
Yeah. Yeah, because who wants to sit there and do that?
Right. Like I thought that was like essential because I didn't know. You know, I was setting up my iTunes. I really thought it was important to get all that right. And then I realize it really isn't all that important. So,
you know, my friend, he's been a guest on our show, Andy Anatko. He's a writer for the Chicago Sun-Times, and he's a great journalist. He, you know, first of all, he knows a crap ton about iTunes and how to set up smart playlists. And he's a big advocate for smart playlists. And, you know, you can get very, very granular in setting up smart playlists in iTunes. And I've actually been meaning to, when I have a little time, some afternoon when I've just got like a little cup of coffee and maybe an hour to kill, I'm going to sit down and kind of read through his article. He wrote like a really nice article on how to use smart playlists because, you know, there's so many things you can do when you create a smart playlist. I mean, you were just touching on some of them. You can match all kinds of rules. So you can add like 30 rules to one playlist, right? Like match all of the following rules. Put artists with this name in a playlist, put the category or genre of music included in this playlist, songs from 2007 to 2008. So you could make a playlist like this, and this is something I want to do actually, which is like, all right, from the year 2007 or whenever I started really using iTunes, right? I don't know. What was it? 2006, 2005, something like that. Who knows? Whenever I got my first iPod. and all of that memory lives in there, right? So you could create playlists for like every year, mm-hmm. and create like your top 25, like the things you were listening to the most that year. Mm-hmm. So you could create, you know, a playlist that has set the condition to be, let's see, only include songs from 2007 to 2008. And you can even do it by date, right? Like January 1st, 2007 to December 31st, 2007. Mm-hmm. Include the songs that were most played. Create it so it's a list of 50. Randomly put it in there. You can do all sorts of things in there. So he is sort of a king of that stuff. And I'm like, that'd be really cool. I would love to do that. There was actually a time when, I don't know if you remember this, when like Billboard magazine, I kind of grabbed the Billboard magazine book of all the like the top 100 songs from, you know, since 1970 or whatever. Mm-hmm. And I was going through and like downloading songs from those years, you know, from like 1991. I was taking like the top 25 songs of that year and making a CD. Mm-hmm. And I was like, oh, I love these songs. You know, I'd hand write out the notes for the liner notes, and like these are the top 25 songs of 1991, and it was sort of like a throwback, you know. It's like, god, this is the stuff I was listening to. So within iTunes you can make lists that are sort of your own throwbacks, you know, these are the things I was listening to a lot 3 years ago, and you know, you could just jump into that playlist anytime and listen to it. Mm-hmm. Or you can make it like, hey, a playlist like of all the stuff you bought. You know, like I buy a crap ton of music on iTunes, right? So you could just set it up by year, like the stuff that I purchased in 2007 or 2008, 2009. You could jump into that playlist and see all the CDs you bought from those particular years. So pretty cool stuff. And I've never really gotten into it. I've never really done it. So so thanks to Andy for writing that piece, because I was like, I need to do something like that.
Mm. Now, along these lines, since we're kind of trekking down into this territory here, have you seen two things? One, I was actually going to pick it up, but I thought you probably already had it. On newsstands right now, there is an entire magazine dedicated to the complete career of REM.
No. Is it like an REM-specific magazine, or is it like Rolling Stone's special edition or something?
No, but it's like an existing magazine dedicated an entire issue to REM. But in addition to which, right next to this, I noticed Rolling Stone released the top 500 albums of all time issue, which
is 500,
right? Which is clearly done to make us mad.
They always do these lists, you know, and maybe you know some of these albums. Do you have like the list in front of you?
Not the complete list, but I can tell you some quick things about it.
Because I was going to say maybe we should take a quick break here. And then
I'll whet your appetite, I'll tell you a little bit about this. These are the people who racked up the biggest numbers on the list. 10 albums each from the Beatles, Bob Dylan, and the Rolling Stones are on this list. The next closest was Springsteen, who had 8. 7 from The Who. But we'll talk more about that in a moment. We should pause here, though, and take a couple seconds to thank one of our great show sponsors. Great friends, not just of this program, but of the Grizzly Productions Network at large. They're our pals over at Cobra. They are makers of ingenious electronic devices. And I like to think of them especially, even though this hardly covers what they do, for hard-traveling people like you and I. They are always out there working. They work on professional-grade GPS navigation stuff and CB radios. And one of their most ingenious devices is the Cobra iRadar. Now, you use this when you travel, right, Clayton?
Oh, absolutely, because there's so many cops on the 2.5-hour drive, like up to the mountains or to my folks' house in Reading, Pennsylvania. You know, it's like a 2-hour drive, and there's a speed trap set up. You're not sure if they're there on the side of the road. And what's cool is it has like a smart feature so that other people can like tag where speed traps are. So it has like some sort of like smart database features in it, which is great, because, you know, it gets smarter because users are actually out there on the road and they're able to share this information. Mm-hmm. And you're on the road way more than I am.
Indeed. And it's indispensable. It makes you a safer and more alert driver, which is not just good for you. It's good for anybody that's ever riding with you. It's good for every other motorist on the road as well. If you are a hard-traveling type like we are, you want to go over and see our friends at Cobra.com. Now, if that doesn't sound like you, I want to tell you about one other thing that they are responsible for, and that's the Cobra Tag System. It's a simple two-way locator that works with your phone, and whatever item it is that you want to attach the Cobra Tag to, it could be your keychain, it could be your laptop bag, who knows. Your Cobra Tag protected item can always be located using the free app on your phone, and it really works two ways, because if you ever then to misplace your phone, you can use your Cobra Tag protected item to ring your phone and help you find it. Solutions like these and a whole lot more await you when you visit our great show sponsors, Cobra.com. We couldn't make this program for free if it weren't for them, so show them some love.
Indeed. We thank them so much for their support of this show. So, so you had a chance to look at this list. I find this fascinating because, you know, we're obsessed with lists in this country. And I don't know if you're familiar with web culture like I am, but it's sort of like crap journalism online when you have these like slideshows, websites that use slideshows, you know?
Right,
like
right.
The best food items under $5 or, you know, that the coolest looking cars from a superhero film. You know, you click on it, it's like a slideshow and you click for it. Do you have any idea why that is considered crap? I mean, other than the fact that it's just like, hey, some jackass sitting in a room is like, hey, let's put up a slideshow and just get people to, you know. I mean, the idea is it's the clicks, right? So if you can make a slideshow that's 25 clicks, you're getting 25 additional page view credits for your advertising rates by doing it that way. So it's, you know, it's sort of unseemly. I mean, you know, Huffington Post is great at creating this sort of crap. You know, and it's just garbage journalism. So, but we're obsessed with lists, right? The top 10 things here, the top 10 cities for losing weight, whatever it is. We always click on them. I don't know what it is, but we just love lists.
Indeed. Indeed. And I had to look at it, even though I knew I would be aggravated immediately because
we love lists.
Because the people at Rolling Stone, like whatever their tastes are, just so at the opposite end of the spectrum from my own. And there were a few pleasant surprises along the way. I was surprised to see how strongly represented Elvis Costello was. The Talking Heads were strongly represented in this. Graceland by Paul Simon was in there, which I think is like a landmark of an album that always gets overlooked in these types of things. Live at the Fillmore East, that Allman Brothers, which like that is live rock and roll, right? Like that was on the list. So there were a couple pleasant surprises in that regard. But there definitely were a lot of very frustrating choices as well as it relates to me. I think one of the most overrated albums of all time is Nevermind by Nirvana.
You do. And you think, is it because you just don't like grunge music, or is it because you think that it was not in some way breakthrough and influential?
No, I think its influence is like beyond reproach. But I think
okay.
That's it. Like I wouldn't sit and listen to that. It's the same with The Clash's London Calling, right? Like that's sort of like this quintessential punk rock album. But is it really a great album? I'll say this, and I'm sure there are people that want to argue this with me, and haha, you're not on my podcast. But I feel the same way about Watchmen in comic books. The influence of Watchmen is beyond refute, but Watchmen as itself isn't all that awesome. Like, it's a very – obviously someone spent a lot of time crafting it. A lot of thought went into it, but it's got lousy art. It's poorly colored. You know what I mean? Like, there's a bunch of characters that don't grab you at all in that, in my opinion. Now, what it did in terms of the way it changed the landscape in comic books, nobody's going to argue that. In the same way that I don't think you can really argue the impact of Nirvana. But I don't necessarily think that Nevermind is like one of the greatest, you know, top 20 greatest albums of all time. Now, this of course, is always the thing that is disputed, is what is the greatest album of all time? And according to Rolling Stone
– well, before you say that, before you reveal that, it's disputed because very often at the top – it's always – you know, it sort of rotates, right? It's either Beatles' Revolver, which has been on the top of some lists – I think it was like was it the VH1 Best Albums of All Time show or something? Then there's also, what else is on the top of that list? Either, you know, the Beatles, Sgt. Peppers, maybe there's...
Sure. Pet Sounds by the Beach Boys is always up there. And I have Pet Sounds, and like, I don't think you can put that up against the top five Beatles albums, let alone, you know what I mean?
Right.
This list, I think they obviously let their love of the Beatles shine through here. Sgt. Pepper's is what they say is the best. Also in the top 20, Revolver was number 3. I think it was like Rubber Soul was number 5. A little bit further down was The White Album, which is a weird choice, I thought, because that's a really disjointed Beatles album, in my opinion. And no way is it does that belong above Abbey Road, in my opinion. So you got three Beatles albums in before there was even a whiff of the Rolling Stones, which I think that's right. But as you go down through the list, and they're, you know, in terms of their impact, there are a lot of really important albums there. Number 12 is Miles Davis's Kind of Blue.
Which is one of my all-time favorite albums.
This stunned me. In the top 20 was Van Morrison's Astral Weeks, not the Moondance album. Astral Weeks. And that seemed like such a peculiar choice. And then this is the bottom of the top 20. And, you know, maybe this is just because, I don't know, we're more appreciative of him now that he's dead. Michael Jackson's Thriller album, which I think has to be like the album of the 80s, is 20. It's number 20 on the list. So that I found baffling. I found it baffling as I paged through this thing that greatest hits compilations were in the list. I thought the point was that this was about albums. Like when Elton John's Greatest Hits Volume 1 turns up, I was like, what?
Well, here's what I don't understand, right? I'm now on the list.
Oh, okay. You found it.
I found it. It's right on the front page of RollingStone.com.
Oh.
And it has a list down there on the left-hand side. It says, you know, 100 greatest guitarists, 100 greatest singers, 500 greatest albums. Anyway, so I clicked on number 20. You know, it's broken down. You can read them through the quick jump feature. So you can see them like 10 to 1, 20 to 11, 110 to 101, et cetera. Anyway, I clicked on 20, and here's what it says. Thriller, Michael Jackson. Now, just given this editorial content here, you would think that it would be higher, right? It says this. Michael Jackson towered over the 80s the way Elvis Presley dominated the 1950s, and Thriller is the reason why. Okay, if this album owned a decade, why is it 20th on the list?
Right.
Right. Now, granted, REM's Murmur racked up somewhat, I guess you could say, maybe higher critical acclaim, I think, that year. I mean, I think it won Album of the Year, if I'm not mistaken. Was it at the Grammys they did that? I remember Murmur beating Thriller. So I don't know. I guess it's not just for sales, right? But it's critical acclaim, but I would have to say at this point in the popular culture, in the popular pantheon, if you will, Thriller, it's sort of unparalleled, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and that's what I mean. Like, I know our perspective on Michael Jackson has really changed since he died, but I don't know how you can. The list is very, very frustrating. It's a very, very frustrating list.
What's the metric here? Is there a metric by which this list is based, or it's just greatest? How do you know?
They even sort of contradict themselves in a way. The introduction in the magazine was written by Elton John. And, you know, he talks about, like, what makes an album great and this kind of thing. And then there are greatest hits compilations in the list, including Elton John's. Like, Elton John's the guy you asked to write, like, spitting right in his face based on what he said. Like,
Elvis, the Sun Sessions, which is a compilation. I mean, this is just a sessions, you know, session work. So Elvis is number 11 on the list.
Right. And, like, just look down further, like, Dark Side of the Moon and The Wall, right? These are two monumental albums in rock, and neither of them are in the top 40.
What is number 7 here? I don't even know this album cover. Oh, Exile on Main Street, the Rolling Stones. So number 9, okay, I got this one. Blonde on Blonde by Bob Dylan. Mm-hmm. And there's two Bob Dylans in there, as you said. So, okay, arguably, yeah, Highway 61 Revisited. I could see that being one of the top rock and roll albums of all time. Like a Rolling Stone, arguably the greatest, you know, one of the greatest rock songs of all time. Mm-hmm. Number one is Sgt. Pepper's. Yeah.
Right. I don't know. I think the only way for us to fix that is, one, either we have to make a list.
Or a better album.
That might be a real problem for you and I, is some of the albums you and I have made in the past would probably not make it onto this list.
Yeah. I don't know if we'd crack the top top 10,000, but we'd be in there. So I just want to jump to the middle because I'm curious. I mean, when you get up to like 270, mm-hmm. right? And I have to wonder, you probably pull, I wonder if this was like a reader survey or if you just pulled this, you just culled this from some other place somehow, like most rotation on for radio. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? Like if this is, if that's part of it. 496 is Kiss. What's at the what's last on here? Yeah, you know, like Pearl Jam Vitalogy is number 492. Mm. Really? Hmm. Number 500. Did you mention 500?
I don't believe so.
Eurythmics.
Mm-hmm.
Touch. There you go.
I don't know. I think here's what I'm getting at. We have to somehow get on these committees. Like that's our best chance.
Yeah.
Of fixing this kind of thing. I don't know how else we would do that.
Yeah. Yeah, and then I'm surprised. Like, here's a great album, 487. I would think that this one even would be higher. Smashing Pumpkins, Melancholy, and the Infinite Sadness.
Mm-hmm.
I feel like that was a... I don't know. There's a lot of great songs on there, and I thought that that really, you know... Sort of the progressive rock that sort of, you know, that sort of modern 70s prog rock that was in there from them. I don't know. I feel like it should be higher.
Yeah, I don't know.
Did you see any monkeys in there? Did you see any monkeys or anything we like?
Not even a whiff. There was no whiff. There's some Police. There's some Talking Heads. There's some REM. You know, kind of like the founding fathers of alternative rock are in there a little bit.
Okay, wait. Synchronicity is 455. Come on!
Right. It is baffling. Like, Remain in Light was the highest Talking Heads album.
Devo is higher than the Police.
And when I was flipping through the magazine too, that was like the first thing I thought. I was like, Clayton sees Devo is above them.
Oh, but you know, at least here you've got, all right, the Police Outlandos de Amor is 434. So really, that's a better album than Synchronicity? Really? I mean, the most memorable song on that album is, you know, is Roxanne.
Mm-hmm.
Man, George Harrison, Waiting on You All. By the way, did you see the new George Harrison book? I think I sent you the link on iBooks. The new, I think it's an iBooks exclusive book. Did you see that thing?
Mm. Yeah, they keep putting out George Harrison stuff. Like they remastered some older stuff of his. And
I had a meeting with Apple a few weeks ago, and they were showing me some different apps and some stuff that's coming out in the next few months, and some cool stuff. But they were showing off. The George Harrison book. I was like, oh, I got to buy this. This is fantastic. You can click on like all sorts of rich video and play stuff. I mean, it's a lot of the and actually he just released an album. Not him, but you know, mm-hmm. his right. camp posthumously.
Yeah.
Did you see that album? It's like a demos yes. album, right?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. You're right about that. Yeah, the people in charge of his estate are certainly making sure that the money keeps on rolling in.
And that Awaiting on You All is pretty good. I don't know if you heard it.
Mm. Yeah, that's my very favorite George Harrison song, Awaiting on You
All. Yeah, it's an acoustic version that he plays. I mean, these are demos. Like, it's him, like, in the studio, like, working through these songs. It's really – here we go. Regatta de Blanc is 369, Police. All right, there we go. I don't understand. I don't understand it.
Right. But, like I said, like, the founding fathers of alternative rock, and Elvis Costello is well represented in there as well. Quite a few of his albums are in there. But, you know, you'll flip through the whole thing and, like, we're talking about alternative music. But you want to talk about prog rock or progressive music. Like, where are the Moody Blues? Like, where's Emerson, Lake, and Palmer? Like, I don't even know if Yes is on that list, right? Like, talk about some of these other genres. Like, they're just, like, ignored.
Right.
So I think the only Eagles album on that whole list was Hotel California. And it had a really terse write-up. It was just like, it was like a quote from Don Henley who said, "We were really good back in the day. This was our best album." Like, that was it. That was all they could manage for that one. It's just baffling. Just absolutely baffling.
Well, Pink Floyd is in here.
Right, sure. But like I said, you know, Dark Side of the Moon and The Wall, both of which you could probably make really decent arguments belong in the top 10. You could have that argument. They aren't even in the top 40, either of them.
Talking Heads, Stop Making Sense. Yeah. Hey, speaking of The Wall, you know, Roger Waters is on that tour right now. We got to go to that thing.
That was over. I thought that tour had ended.
No, I mean, my buddy, my friend Leo Laporte had just put up on Path the other day. He was at The Wall in San Francisco, Roger Waters' The Wall. So I don't know if it's still around or if it did it come to Philly yet.
I don't know.
Oh, I gotta go see that.
But you know, that was like the highest grossing concert tour of last year. I mean, that the tickets are outrageous for that, and he's not having any problem selling it out in every city.
So. Yeah, I would imagine.
I want to throw this to you. I meant to talk to you about this a week or so ago, and we just ran out of time. We were talking Avengers and Batman and Spider-Man, and we ran out of time. So I want to throw this out to you, and I want you to start to wrap your brain around this. I think you will recall with me, one of the fondest annual traditions of our childhood was that the church I attended, St. Ignatius of Westlawn, Pennsylvania, held an annual summer carnival.
Yes, yes, yes.
And it was almost like the whole, you know, the summer, you know, when we were released from school, was like this undirected, just kind of like aimless, giant chunk of free time. And the only thing, like, in my mind that really, like, you could count on happening every summer was this, that this carnival would come for 3 or 4 days to the parking lot of the church that I went to, which was about 3 blocks from where we grew up, and a good time would be had by all. You knew you could count on this. And eventually it was discontinued. Do you remember that?
I didn't know that they stopped doing it. I know that over, like, at a separate area, they had another carnival, like at Owl's Grove. But why did they discontinue it?
I think right around the time you and I were in college, they couldn't get enough volunteers. That was the problem. A lot of the games would be staffed by the church types, the parishioners, I guess is the correct term. And for lack of that, because it was a huge operation. There would be like the games where the church was making money. There were also like the carny games. There were rides at one end of the parking lot inside the school. And this, I'm sure, is 100% illegal. They had gambling games. They had a beer garden. Do you remember, like, aside the elementary school, they had a beer garden? That's where they wanted all the drunken adults.
No, but I wish I would have known about that.
Right, yeah.
It was before my beer drinking time.
I guess. So I was thinking about this and because there was a carnival very near my home where I live now, like a week or so ago. And one night I took my son Elliot over to the carnival. And I was just kind of like listening as we were walking by some of the gimmicked games, you know, the ones that are like made so that you can't possibly win them. Listening to them like bark at us as we would walk by, or my son had a Batman jacket on. So they would see him coming, and if they had a prize like in their stall that had Batman on it, they would take it off the wall and shake it out like to grab his attention, thinking that would lure me over, and then I would attempt to play the gimmicked game that can't be won for $5, you know, like
right.
Hit the solid concrete milk bottles off of the little pedestal with a baseball and win, which it can't be done. So I was observing all of this going on. I was observing like the people selling the tickets in the booth because, you know, you need tickets for the rides, which are always sold. Hopefully I'm refreshing your memory a little bit here. These ride tickets, you can't pay cash. Like if you want to go on the merry-go-round, you want to go on the Tilt-A-Whirl or whatever, you can't hand the person running at cash. You have to hand them these ride tickets, which are sold in packs of 10. But all the rides are 3 tickets. So you would, in order to come out even at the end of this, you'd have to buy 3 sets, right?
Right.
Because you would be, you know, you'd have to get to 30. That would be the first multiple of 3 that you could reach. You know what I'm saying?
Exactly.
So you'd always get to the end and have 1 ticket left over, right? Because you'd use up 9 of the 10 that you bought, and you're like, oh, I guess I got to go buy more. But you can only buy them in sets of 10. So now you have 11 tickets, right? Well, that's still, right? You're screwed. So I was kind of thinking about this, right? And the fact – and I maybe have an undue fondness for the carny types because, you know, what I do, professional wrestling, really comes from that. Like we are carnies in our own way. And but I was thinking – this was done in conjunction with the church, as was the carnival that we recall from our youth. How is it that I think the general stereotype of carnival folks, right, are they're kind of like these gypsy types, nomadic gypsies that go from town to town. Like they kind of bilk the town out of their money with their dishonest games and their kind of slimy way of doing things and all that sort of thing. How did they end up being so like integrated into like church culture? Right, like when did the Roman Catholic Church just decide, you know who we need to team up with? The carnies. Like this is going to be the best way to get more money. Like we want you to bring in your bad dart games and the milk bottle games that can't be won and all these other things. And let's just fleece these people for as much money as you think we can for, what do you think, 3 days? Three? A week? How long do you think we can get away with that?
I mean, it is a weird cross-pollination, if you will. And if you think about it, I remember being – well, first of all, it was like slave labor, right? Remember, as a child, we got pulled into those – the carny areas for the – I don't know if you did this. I certainly did this. Where the guy, you know, there was one thing where you'd walk up with the darts and you'd throw the darts at the big balloon board.
Right.
And you'd try to puncture the balloons to win a prize. Sure. Well, this was like one of the one of the carny things that you could actually win a prize. It was conceivable you could throw a dart and pop a balloon, right?
Right. But you know how those are gimmicked, right?
Well, they're underblown.
Exactly. They underinflate them so that there isn't that surface tension for you to pop with the dart.
But apparently, I don't know. Maybe the kids weren't doing it that way because he would pay you. The carny guy would grab a bunch of kids, and you would go in the back and just blow up balloons. Mm-hmm. So there was a group of us trying to make money. We're like, oh, yeah, we can make a few bucks. And we would go down there every night to try to make money, right? And he'd pay you like a dollar for like an hour's work mm-hmm. of blowing up balloons. Mm-hmm. And you were, I mean, completely lightheaded after like 5 minutes.
Right, of course.
And it was hot. You know, it was the summer. So you were kind of like blowing up these balloons, falling over, passing out because you're blowing hot air into these balloons. So apparently either the kids weren't doing it well enough or something was happening where the people were popping the balloons with the darts. But I remember I gave up after like 5 minutes. I was like, I can't do this. There's no way. You know, like I don't know how long it was, but I was like, I'm not going to spend my whole night here. Like – I can't even see straight anymore. Did you do this to raise money, or were you too smart to avoid it?
No, you were in on the carny side of things, and I was on the flip side because you know my parents attended church there, so they would always appeal to the congregation. They would need volunteers to staff these booths and things, you know, because I don't know what the flip side was. If we don't do this, the church goes out of business. Like I don't know what.
Right, because the Catholic Church is hurting, right? I mean, it's not
– They are.
Catholic Church is not known to be able to raise money or survive.
Right. I mean, you see the way that they live there in Vatican City. I mean
– Yeah, it's not lavish.
They're hurting. They're hurting. So, you know, I would always get sucked in. Like I'd be the guy, you know, like the ping pong balls into the goldfish bowls. I'd be that kid, the kid that like, you know, collects all the missed ping pong balls for one whole night. And, you know, it was made out to be like as if that was our – church going duty or whatever, you know, that was
right.
I don't know.
God wants you to collect ping pong balls,
right? The labor tithe. You right. know, I don't know what that was supposed to be.
Yeah, I love those. Yeah, those nights though, and I think back on them fondly. But then I was driving by one just the other day. We were driving, and there was one set up like in a parking lot somewhere. And I thought to myself, you know, I don't know that I would really enjoy going there. Right now, because I mean, other
you mean
than
the moment, you meant right then. And he's like, I got to go potty.
Yeah, I'm like, I don't know that I want to go here. But I mean, other than like maybe getting a funnel cake, mm-hmm. I don't know that I'd want to go and deal with that. I mean, you know, I shouldn't say that. At the boardwalk, I was at the boardwalk at Ocean City, Maryland last summer, and we walked through the whole, you know, the whole area. And I wanted to go into the haunted house. My wife was too scared to go in the haunted house, which is like a rickety old thing with like. There's nothing scary in it.
It's just unsafe. That's why she didn't want to go.
Right. It is unsafe, to be honest with you. The thing's falling on you. It's like it's been there since the 60s. You know that it's not safe.
Right.
But there's no, you know, there's nothing really you want to actually play. And do you want to win one of those big stuffed asbestos-filled dolls that they give out to?
Oh, my God. Do I? I want a 20-pound SpongeBob SquarePants. Of course I do.
And you know it's like some weird synthetic hair fibers on it that you give it a hug and it like it all coughs off into your face. It's not some quality thing. And chances are it's made in China.
Well, I didn't realize you had such an aversion to the products made in China, but no, the whole thing is just – I was just mystified by that. And that really is like – that's like a classic American kind of thing, is it not? That like – the church carnival that comes around, like these amusement companies team up with them every summer and they just, we're here to bilk you out of your money and
yeah.
blow on to the next town, I guess, or what have you. I don't know.
it is a massive undertaking. One that I couldn't – I don't know how you guys deal with it with Chikara. I mean, you know, having to move a ring and set up an operation like that from a from a hall to a hall. I couldn't handle it. I like things just being set up and, I want to walk up to my office desk and know that my – my iPod syncing cord is hanging right where I left it, you know. But every day you're probably dealing with some new problem as you roll into a different venue, right?
Sure.
Well, this power source isn't working. Well, we usually put the bearded lady over here, but now we can't because there's no bathroom spot. Like the logistical nightmare, just I couldn't handle it.
Yeah, and I would like to know there are a couple interesting books that I know of that sort of touch on this in a circumstantial way, but anyone knows of any good books that sort of like follow the history of carnivals or traveling circuses in America? I would love to read a book that's really authoritative on that kind of thing. But I can only imagine what like, you know, because of my experience in wrestling, like what it must be like egos in the carnival, you know, like right. what does that consist of? You know what I mean? Like, oh, the bearded lady can't be back here at this part of the lot. She wants to be up front, you know, or the ones that like they even had this at this carnival I just saw like a week ago. They had like a freak show sort of thing where they had all these banners hanging, like come in and see the devil pig, you know, or whatever. Like, you know, you got to put the devil pig out front where he's going to make money.
Devil pig.
Can't put devil pig, you know, halfway back on the midway. We need him out in front.
I think one of the most popular books that was made into a movie recently that sort of follows this life is Water for Elephants. And it follows the traveling carnivals. It's a work of fiction, but
right.
From what I understand, though, from the folks who've read it and some of the reviews I've read of it over the years, and I've considered reading it, and I've just had other books on my list that I just never got to it, that it is largely informed by a lot of the research that the author did with traveling carnivals. So a lot of the animals and just the way that they live is all in this piece of fiction. So it's informed by that. But it is it's a fictional story built into it. Kind of like, almost sort of like one movie that did it some justice, sort of the traveling carnival atmosphere, was Tim Burton's Big Fish.
Mm-hmm. Yes. Yeah, I really liked that movie. I thought that was, it's kind of like a overlooked gem.
Yeah.
I think. Probably because that one didn't have enough Johnny Depp in weird costumes.
Right.
People probably would have paid more attention if they thought to put him in some weirder costumes.
We're going to take a break here real fast and thank one of our show sponsors. When we come back, I'm going to ruin and spoil Breaking Bad Season 4 for you. But first, Mike is going to tell us about our friends at Gazelle.com because they've sort of streamlined things over there. And they got them down to like – they were getting a lot of feedback from people as to what sort of gadgets they wanted to trade in. And it turns out there were like 13 popular gadgets that most people were trading in on Gazelle to upgrade to get new devices and things. So Android phones, laptops, Apple devices, iPads, iPhones. They really cut down what they accept anymore, and it's made their operations a bit more streamlined, right?
Mm-hmm. That's right. So go over there and take a look. Maybe it's your cell phone or some of those Apple goods like the iPod and the iPad and MacBook, that sort of thing that they're looking for, because they'll take it off your hands and they'll give you money. How about that? We're making you money, people. And, of course, the support of people like Gazelle.com is exactly the reason why we're able to deliver this podcast to you free every single week. So please take a minute of your time to go over to Gazelle.com. Find out what your used consumer electronic good is worth. And remember, every time you go through them, the shipping's free. They're going to take care of that for you. The payment's going to come fast, whether it's a check or it comes into your PayPal. Or you can opt for an Amazon.com gift card and get an extra 5%. And you can always be certain that you're getting fair prices with them. We found them to be exceptionally honest. Both Clayton and I have had really good experiences dealing with Gazelle.com over the years, and we continue to use them when the time comes for us to trade in our gadgets. Because as you know, Clayton, he loves those gadgets. He needs money for his next upgrade. And you know me, I need money to go to Dairy Queen. So
that's right.
You too may need money for one of these or perhaps other things. Go over and see Gazelle.com. It'll only take you a minute of your time. I would really appreciate it if you would do that for us, because we want Gazelle to like us.
We certainly do. Hey, have you had a chance yet to start Breaking Bad Season 4? Because I know, you know, we've talked about it here on the show. We said March of this year we were going to begin to do that as our next discussion point.
Mm-hmm. And we did. If you missed that episode, it's no longer available.
Right. We pulled it down.
Yeah. Got a lot of really thumbs downs.
Must have been when I wasn't involved big in the show somehow. I'm not sure.
That's right. Well, as you know, Clayton, for a while, there was just a guest on the show.
Right.
Just a guest. So, no, I haven't seen any of it. So do you want to spoil it? I'm guessing Walt dies.
Well, to be honest with you, I haven't finished it yet.
Oh.
So we've been watching. We couldn't hold out anymore. Mm-hmm. Now, I told my neighbor about the show, and he travels all the time. So he's got an iPad, you know, and he's like – we told him about Breaking Bad, and so, of course, he went to Netflix and was, you know, streaming the first few episodes while he was out on the road and watching it, and he just became addicted to it. Because, you know, arguably, it's the best show on television, right? Mm-hmm. So then he got up to, like, season three, and he's like, oh, season four, you know, it's available to buy on iTunes or whatever. But it's not out yet. You know, it's not out on Netflix until probably, I don't know, late summer, midsummer, who knows when it's coming out. But so he ended up buying season four and offered to, you know, lend me his iPad to stream it. And I said, no, I'm just going to go buy it. You know, it's $29 to get, maybe it was 19. I think I bought the standard definition, whatever it was, you know, to mm-hmm. get the whole season. So watch it on your iPad, watch it on Apple TV. So we bought it. And there, actually, it's really cool on iTunes. There's a whole bunch of extras that you, if you buy the season, there's a whole bunch of digital extras. So you get all the sort of the behind the scenes. They're, you know, talking about each episode. There's like separate little mini episodes where they're having discussion about the episode you just watched, which is cool. And they have, you know, interviews with the cast. And so it's some cool extra stuff that they're featuring, like on iTunes if you buy it that way. Nevertheless, so we and I looked for it. Trust me, I looked for it like on the AMC app, and it's not there. It, you know, there's, I don't know, there's just like little web clips and stuff like that that are on the AMC app. So anyway, we're tearing through it, and oh god, we have one more episode to go. Mm-hmm. Last night we watched like the second to last episode, and we were just sitting there with our, you know, our jaws agape the entire episode, and you're just like on the edge of your seat. It's just that, you know, tense. Mm-hmm. So I think tonight we're going to watch the final episode of season four. I cannot wait. So you've managed to hold out a lot longer than I could.
Mm-hmm. Yes. Incidentally, it's pronounced agape. It's a Native American term. Mm-hmm. You can use that. I don't know where you got agape from.
So are you gonna start watching it soon? I need you on board, man. I want to talk about this with you.
I don't know. It, has it been released yet to VHS? Why are you laughing?
No, VHS. No, that's actually, it's Native American. It's pronounced Luddite.
I see. I didn't realize that.
You know what's funny, though? Mm. You mentioned VHS. Well, first of all, answer my question, and then I'll tell you. I'll tell you about VHS.
No, I couldn't honestly tell you when because. You know, my VCR is in the shop,
mm-hmm.
so I don't know how we're going to get to that.
And you do own an iPad. You could just – and you're on the road an awful lot. This seems to me like up your alley. Breaking Bad.
I tell you what. Despite the fact that the iRadar makes me more alert, I don't know that watching Breaking Bad on my iPad as I'm driving is the best idea.
Well, something tells me you're not always the one doing the driving. And aren't you in hotel rooms a lot? I figured like this would be the perfect place for you to sit back and watch on your iPad. So
not a lot, but every once and again, I suppose that's true.
Let's see. I don't know when it's available streaming. Let's see if it's coming out on Netflix soon. I want to get a definite date for our audience if they're going to watch it on watch it on Netflix or not. But it's hard to think. I think it was like June. It may be June, and it may be July that it's available. For on Netflix, so I don't know. Check it out if you can, but I want you to start watching it because I want to have this discussion. It's driving me nuts. I'm like, all these episodes. I just want to text you and be like, did you watch episode six yet? And I'm like, no, he's not. He's not watching it yet. The other day I was at the Starbucks, which I'm at frequently, but there's this one near my gym, and I don't know if you have this in your Starbucks, your local Starbucks, because I know you frequent it daily. They have this thing called the Clover. Have you seen this now at Starbucks?
The Clover. Tell me a little bit about it.
It's, I don't know if they're rolling it out in select Starbucks or not.
Is it the new crazy press that you can see it doing the thing with the beans?
Yeah, kind of. I mean, and so they have like this, I don't know, this group of beans that you can buy that are select. And they're expensive. Mm-hmm. Apparently. And they talk about their, you know, they're handpicked. They're from different regions around the world. They can't like mass produce them so they can But they're more expensive, and they're
because people's dirty hands pick them. Right. That's why.
The Indonesian cat coffee poop. Have you seen that? Where the cat eats the coffee beans and then craps them out. I think that's the world's most expensive coffee. And I looked that up on the web.
Sounds delicious.
So no, they have these hand-picked beans. You can get like certain selected cups of coffee. Like they have like six, and they sort of rotate which high-end coffees they're going to feature. You know, that may be like 30, 40 cents more than you'd normally pay for like just a regular cup of coffee, but still like a lot cheaper than getting, you know, like a mocha or something like that, you know, because it's just drip coffee. But boy, I tried, they had Kona, 100% Kona coffee from Hawaii, and it's like, oh, it was amazing. It was delicious. And, you know, nothing in it, just black coffee. I just got a tall. It was fantastic. But then they have a whole select of them. So now they have this clover setup, and I tweeted about it. All these people are like, oh, my God, I want that. I've heard of this. I want it. And they make it. They, like, brew it by cup. So they'll grind the beans for you when you ask for your specific cup, and then they pour the hot water over it. And, like, even the barista, like, she, like, stirs it so that it, like, you know, it steeps for, like, 2 minutes. And then you get your nice, steeped, hot cup of select coffee, and it's fantastic. Mm-hmm. Really, really good coffee. So anyway, this one particular Starbucks, it's where I guess they're trying it out in certain locations, but this was one location. So I go here frequently. And they have like a trade-in shelf where you can like share books, sort of like a community, like little Starbucks library. Mm-hmm. So they've got like some novels, they've got some magazines, they've got some, you know, things you can borrow and take with you and then bring back or read at the Starbucks, presumably, and then share with other folks. But on the bottom shelf, it's all VHS tapes.
Mm.
Really? Like, who has a VCR anymore that works?
What are you kidding? I have three in my house.
But I mean, right. But who besides you has a VCR setup? I mean, don't people – I mean, even DVDs are now – didn't they come out like in the 80s?
DVDs? I don't know. You would probably know that better than me.
But I mean, really? Do people still – because I mean, God knows, like – Blockbuster isn't even open anymore. There's not even a place that you would get them anymore.
It has been hard, I have to admit. Like,
and you don't buy VHS. I mean, do you wrestling stuff? Do you still?
Yeah, I have the Dark Knight on VHS.
In standard definition, you're like, oh, I have the chance to get it in letterbox, or I have the chance to get it with it zoomed in and blown up. I'm gonna get the standard. I hate those black bars at the top and bottom of my
screen. Do. You know that. I hate that. Give me the pan and scan. And I've even asked sometimes. I said to him a number of times, because there aren't as many places to get it anymore. I said, is this available in lower resolution?
Right. You're like, I want it as pixelated as possible. I want to not be able to tell the difference between Two-Face and the Joker. Do you have that copy?
Is there one here that'll really disagree with the tracking knob?
Right. What about the V hold? Can you have one that you can get me where the V hold is off? Because I want to watch that.
And that, I mean, you think you're paying a lot for a cup of coffee. It's being stirred by a barista and picked by somebody's dirty hands. You can't imagine what it costs these days to get the low-resolution, tracking disagreeable VHS copy of The Dark Knight.
Which is still less than what you're paying for your cinnamon dolce latte that you love. Which is still like, you know, it's funny. Like, I was leaving the Starbucks, and my wife, you know, she texts me. She's like, hey, you're at Starbucks. She's like, can you get me something on your way home? And, like, my coffee drink is usually, like, $2, you know, just, like, black coffee. And she texts me, and I'm like, you know, what do you want? She usually gets a grande, what does she usually get? Chai tea latte. That's what she gets. That's her drink, right? And then today she's like, yeah, I want, you know, can you get me, I need some caffeine. Can you get me like a half calf mocha or something like that? Mm-hmm. I was like, yeah, sure. So it's like a grande half calf mocha. It was like $5.30. I was like, really? Mm-hmm. If that's your habit every day. How much is the cinnamon dolce latte that you get?
Yeah, I don't know what a half calf is, but
half caffeine, half. You can get like half decaf, half regular. She can't handle caffeine. She gets it. She gets like.
What do you mean she can't handle it?
Caffeine for her is not
right. What do you mean she can't handle it? What does that mean?
It means if she has like a fully caffeinated cup of coffee, she gets like jittery and like chatty.
And she gets chatty,
really talkative, and with wives, you don't want them to be chatty, right?
Ooh, well, you should have just put that up front there,
right? So, yeah, your cinnamon dolce latte. You have any idea?
Right? Do I have any idea? It doesn't make me chatty.
Well, we don't need you to be more chatty. We need you to. Well, actually, we do. To be honest with you, really spice things up here. Now, how much is your? You get a tall? Do you get a grande? Do you get a venti?
Always a grande. Always a grande. Yeah, it's $14.32 a cup.
Right. It's a Facebook share.
Right. Yeah. Oh, that was a very timely reference. Mm-hmm. I prefer if we could constrain our references to a minimum of 10 years ago.
It's a Google share.
Right, yeah. So, well, they are quite expensive. Yeah, there's no two ways about that. But incidentally, I don't know if you've seen this. You know, they're always trying to roll out new things. They've had a couple new pastries arrive.
Really? Oh, Starbucks. I thought it was just my people in general rolling out new things.
Right, yeah. There's new kinds of products in the world. Have you heard of that Dyson ball vacuum? Anyway,
the sticky
at the Starbucks, they have a couple new things. One of them is like this raspberry pound cake. Have you seen that? They've been pushing it hard this month.
I've seen that, but I tend to stay away from that stuff. I know you go right for that glass case.
Of course, sure. Yeah, I had a loaf of that the other day, and they have these new. They're calling them tarts. But I don't really think of them as tarts.
Oh, yeah. They're like the little mini pies.
No, that's different. Those are called pies. The tarts are these little flat rectangles. And one is like brown sugar walnut is the one, and the other one is something chocolate.
Are they bite-sized? And
they're really like two or three bites. I mean, unless you have a large mouth, I guess. For me, these are 2 to 3 bites each, which for $1.50, I don't know about that. But anytime they, you know, if they roll something out new – a lot of times what they'll have for you at Starbucks is they'll have a sample where you can have one bite to determine if you like it. And certainly if you want me to pay $1.50 for 3 bites, I think I'd like to know.
Right.
These are like a mouthful of sand. I don't know why you would pay anyone any amount of money. Only by accident would you want a mouthful of sand.
A lot of people go to the beach.
You might sue someone, depending on the circumstance, about over having a mouthful of sand. I'm not going to pay you for this. I'm glad that you put that in the little foil thing as a sample for me or whatever. But it always calls to mind. You remember the Malcolm Gladwell story about why it was that Pepsi would win taste tests over Coke?
Right, because it's just the mouthful, the one mouthful. But then when you would have an entire can of it, people are like, oh, this sucks. You got to go back. You need a Coke. I mean, it was the whole reasoning behind New Coke, right? New Coke tried to taste like Pepsi. Because those blind taste tests, right? If I'm remembering this correctly, all the blind taste tests were showing that people liked Pepsi in one sip over Coke. Mm. So Coke was like, wait a second. How do we get – we got to taste more like Pepsi. Mm. But the problem was that it was just a one sample taste test that these people were doing.
Right. In the larger – like in a can size, they preferred Coke.
Right.
So I have to wonder if like there isn't something to be learned from that about – this for Starbucks, like in a one bite, this is like a mouthful of sand. Maybe I don't know how it's going to cut into your profit margin, but if you're hoping to get somebody hooked on these tarts, you might need to give them the whole thing. Because one bite, nope. And I think that they know me pretty well at this at the one Starbucks that's convenient for me to go to. They know me as like the surly guy in the morning that doesn't want to talk. And I'm always very short when I'm in there in terms of my verbiage, not in terms of my height. And
You stand on an apple box so they can see you over the counter.
Right. Yeah. And Randy Newman hates me. I just put it in my mouth and looked right at her. There's a barista there who always calls me Brian, and
what?
I never want to correct her. Like I'm so content to be Brian in her mind.
Because that's what you wrote on the comment card when you were complaining about her cinnamon dolce latte making skills.
That was my passive aggressive. Yeah. So
Brian says you have no idea how to make a cinnamon dolce latte. I'm going to make sure I call out Brian the next time he's in here. But didn't you hear? And my wife bought me this book, and I still have yet to read it, and I've forgotten about it. But I need to read it because I think it'd be interesting. Howard Schultz, who is the CEO of Starbucks, his book called Onward, which, for a while was for sale in Starbucks.
Yes, of course.
And, he turned around the company.
Mm-hmm.
Well, when he came back, I think prior to his coming back to Starbucks, there was they started rolling out these different food items in the store.
Right.
And I had read somewhere that it was their goal was to make the food not tasty. And I'm not sure.
And why?
I need to go back and do some Googling on this. I promise this will be follow-up. I'll do it next week. Right? I'm going to find out some more info on this. But I read a series of pieces about this.
Mm-hmm.
But it was that the goal, or at least the people were finding that the food was not good, but it didn't matter because it was convenience. So Starbucks didn't care that the food didn't taste good. Okay. Like in taste tests, they weren't there to sell the food. But because people were coming in and getting their cup of coffee, it saved them a trip to McDonald's to buy the Egg McMuffin.
Mm-hmm.
So what they found was that people were driving to a separate place to get food. They'd get their coffee at Starbucks, and then they'd drive like somewhere else to get their breakfast sandwich while they were driving to work. So Starbucks, in an effort to squash that, just was offering, hey, we've got this here too.
Right.
These sort of bagged.
And they do have like breakfast items, you know, like I see other people getting them because I always hear them saying, do you want that toasted? And then,
yeah,
you know, somebody runs over, but they look gross. You know, when I see them in that window, I'm like, I don't want that in my mouth.
Yeah. The thing is, I order though. There was a time when I lived in Manhattan where I like would get up in the morning, go down and grab the paper and sit there and have a cup of coffee and read the paper and have this sandwich because I didn't feel like walking to some other place to get it. I would sit there in one place and I'd eat my egg sandwich every day. Mm-hmm. You know, for like the first year I lived in Manhattan, that's what I did. But I remember reading a piece about how they didn't care that they didn't taste good. And like Starbucks was like, we don't care. We're not going to like change that. And I think Howard Schultz tried to change that at least in part by offering some other options. But for the most part, like those breakfast sandwiches, one of which tastes like cardboard. There's like a turkey bacon one. I think that like you could reshingle your roof with it.
Mm-hmm.
And actually, I bet the roofing material will probably taste better than this thing does. So I'll do some follow-up. I'll bring that. And I know you'll be with rapt attention for next week's episode. I'll bring that to you.
I am. Well, I'm always fascinated to know that sort of thing. Like, we make food that's terrible. Here's why. Here's our thought process. We want you out of our place.
Right.
We don't want you to hang around. You'll be like, this is gross. I'm leaving.
But now I should say, like, Howard Schultz went about to try to recreate that experience of having the third place. You know, you have work, you have home, and then you have that third place that you go to. So he got rid of like the uncomfortable chairs again, like when he came back as CEO and all that sort of stuff. So I'll try to find that.
Mm. Yeah. So I'd be interested to know more about that. You know, the rationale behind those things I think is always fascinating to discover. Hey, I want to mention this. I've been remiss in not mentioning this. It's less than 2 weeks away now, especially by the time you're hearing this. Chikara, the pro wrestling company that I call home and which just celebrated its 10th anniversary this past weekend.
Can you believe that?
I can't. I don't like thinking about it. It makes me feel old. We are hosting our second live pay-per-view event ever on Saturday night, June the 2nd. If you cannot come see us at the Trocadero Theater in Philadelphia, we'd love for you to watch it. You can stream it live right onto your computer, or your mobile device, or through your Roku box. All the event information that you need is, of course, at chikarapro.com, or ordering it for streaming is over at gfl.tv, as in Go Fight Live, gfl.tv. And it is a stacked card. I think if you've often wondered whether or not something like this might be up your alley, this is a great way to check it out, as everyone worldwide will be seeing it live all at the very same time. Check it out, Chikarasaurus Rex. How to Hatch a Dinosaur, which is just loaded with ridiculous pop culture allusions. That title, How to Hatch a Dinosaur, was the title of a 60s Batman episode. But if you check out our videos online, you'll see everything is thematically like Grand Theft Auto Vice City. So go poking around a little bit, and we would love to see you or have your eyeballs on us on June 2nd. We'll also, by the way, we're going to be that same weekend, just one block over from the Trocadero. Come out and see us. We'll be at Wizard World in Philadelphia. The Chikara gang will be out in force. I can't tell you exactly where our booth is going to be. I haven't seen the floor plan, but we'll be at Wizard World. So drop by and see us there. Come see us in person. Come say hello. I always like to meet members of the Egghead Army in person.
Indeed. That's always great. I always love hearing the feedback once you get to see some fans and everything. So hopefully they'll come up to you and talk to you about – I know we have a lot of Grizz listeners who go to the shows as well.
Yes, indeed we do.
And we should mention, we've got some great shows here on the network. And one of my favorite shows on the network, I've got a few, of course. But
This one mostly.
But, we've got some other ones, too. If you're into comic books, you got to check out the Weekly Long Box, which is a great discussion between Todd and Leonard. every week as they deep dive on all the different big comic books that are out there. They buy all of them. They have a great discussion about them. And I have learned a lot from those guys. And on a past episode, I think I was listening 2 weeks ago, where they were talking about a recent Chikara show where you know, they had a number of individuals coming up saying how much they love the weekly long box, and they really enjoy that show. So they've got a great community going on over there. If you haven't listened yet, go over and listen to the weekly long box, our comic book show.
Absolutely. And the latest and greatest addition to the Grizzly Productions Network lineup is On the Spectrum, the Autism Show. If you know someone or you yourself have been impacted by autism, you'll want to give a listen to this by the great husband and wife duo of Don and Jen Wade. They're over there. I think the fourth episode is already available, I think, if I'm not mistaken. So this is a great time to get on board this brand new podcast of ours here. We're very, very proud of this here at Grizzly Productions. That's On the Spectrum, the Autism Show. That, like all of our programs, can be found at grizzlyproductions.tv.
Indeed. So we thank you so much for listening this week. We'll be back next week, where Mike will have watched all of season 4 of Breaking Bad.
And season 5.
And season 5, which isn't even out yet. They haven't even made it, but he's got, you know, he's got that on VHS.
I have it in a white clamshell. Just like the Disney movies.
Those were so annoying because they didn't really fit on the shelf, you know? Like, they didn't fit on the those big Disney white clamshell VHS tapes. Boy, do you got to really be kicking yourself, right? If you bought those things, remember they would release them as special editions?
Sure, oh yeah.
And they'd go through the rotation, right? They'd roll out The Lion King, and they're like, we're going to only release it for 3 weeks. Mm-hmm. Buy it now, right? And then it would vanish, and you couldn't get it again. So you'd spend like $29 to buy the Disney special editions of like The Lion King or whatever. And then, you know, now they're like obsolete. You know, mm-hmm. VHS tapes are – they don't even make – I don't even think they make VHS players anymore. I think the last one just rolled off the line recently.
Right. It was made here in my house. I will say this about the folks at Disney. They know how to make money.
Right. So then they roll out – then they roll out the DVD versions of them, right? So then people go out and buy those. And then they cut – then they invent Blu-ray. Mm-hmm. You know, like the highest possible quality. And then there'll be like a higher quality that they'll somehow come up with, like super Blu-ray. I mean, this is the genius, like the George Lucas, right? They just released the Blu-ray Star Wars editions, which immediately became like the top-selling DVDs in the country. You're like, don't Star Wars fans already own all of these 8 times over?
Probably. Did you see, by the way, you know they re-released Phantom Menace to theaters?
In 3D.
Yeah. And you know, it did not do well.
Yeah, I was not surprised. I mean, first of all, that's the weakest of all of them.
I really dislike Phantom Menace.
I wouldn't mind seeing the old ones in 3D. Mm-hmm. I wouldn't, you know, I wouldn't mind if they spent, I think they spent $30 million to switch it, or $40 million to switch Phantom Menace to 3D.
Wow.
$40 million to update Phantom Menace to 3D. So
I had no idea.
Now, if they would have done that with like A New Hope and Empire Strikes Back, I would pay to go see that. Mm-hmm. I'd pay to go see those in the theater again.
Sure, yeah. It'd be fun to see them on the big screen.
Did you see them when they were re-released in the late 90s?
No. But I think around the time of Jedi, there were enough theaters that like showed them all. Like you could go all day to the theater and watch them back to back to back. I've seen that original trilogy in theaters, but you know, when I was very young.
Yeah.
Hey, by the way, we really got to get out of here. Did you see right now where it stands? Avengers, the fourth biggest grossing film of all time. It is number 4.
Yeah, I'm glad you mentioned this. I looked this morning. 55 million again this weekend, almost.
Yep, destroyed everything at the box office.
Jeez. So it's likely going to knock Harry Potter out of the totals, I think. Yep. I think I read. But will it hit Titanic out of the top? I don't know.
Right. Certainly Titanic, that had that extra release recently as the anniversary of the Titanic pass, that probably boosted its overall numbers. And what else is up there? Avatar?
Yeah, Avatar is underneath. No, it's Avatar, Titanic, and what's number 3?
Isn't 3 Harry Potter?
Yeah, maybe Harry Potter's number 3 all time. Yeah, I think Deathly Hallows maybe is 3 all time, and now the Avengers. Unbelievable.
It's a monster of a film.
Was it 2 weeks now?
I think it's in week 3. So, yeah, I'll be interested. We will update you on that and a whole lot more when we see you on the next Grizz.
Indeed. See you, my friend.
Okay, goodbye now.